Good morning, 5:58 a.m. on Thursday, July the 13th, 2017. Yeah, it's not even 6 o'clock yet, although it's close. I've been up for 2 hours, I've had a cup of coffee, I've had my toast. I've got to get back so I can wake the kid, fix her some breakfast, get her off to work. So that when I come back, I'll be primed to get my word processor warmed up and get going on that. I am feeling motivated today. And I apologize for not remembering the name, but somebody left a comment on, I think it was yesterday's podcast about motivation, about not worrying about how many words, but rather working to keep my mind in a motivated state so that regardless of how many words I do, my mind is in a position to encourage me to perform the act of writing, regardless of how many words it does. And that's actually the point of the motivational exercises, is to use those exercises to form a foundation against which performance happens. It's like convincing myself that there isn't really anything else I'd rather do than to write, and as long as I sit down and do that, then the word counts will add up. The word counts will come. Yesterday I did sit down. I did write 2,000 words, 2,500. I used the travel machine, thank you, for the Chromebook, which was donated, and I've got Linux running on it, and it's more than adequate to the tasks of writing. So yeah, yesterday was a 2,500 word day. And my goal is 5,000 words a day. And the reason I have a word count is that word counts are one measurement. I actually wrote probably close to 3,500 words yesterday, but the story was going in a wrong place, so I backed it out and went back to where it was actually working. My mind, my brain, tends to overly complicate things when it doesn't need to. So I was doing all sorts of, The story is complex enough without adding extra layers, which I probably would never use. So, but yeah, word counts are a measurement that is, in a certain sense, superficial, but in another sense, a way to pace myself so that I don't burn out by pushing for 20,000 words in a day and then being disappointed if I don't make it, or even 10,000 words a day, being disappointed if I don't make it, and demotivating myself when I don't make it too many days in a row. So my goal is 5,000 words. If I do anything over 5,000 words, that's a bonus. But if I get to 5,000 words, then that's a signal to my brain, to me, that I've done my thing. I've earned the day's crust. I can put it down now without feeling too terribly guilty. I can go to bed. I can go to bed and not worry about the day. Now the truth is, I need to be in a position where I don't need to worry about the day anyway. I'm still enough of a peace worker kind of guy that having something that I can measure and say, yes, I did what I needed to do today. That a measurement of just the hours I put in don't really give me the satisfaction that getting the word count that I want does. So yeah, that's, you know, the word count thing, I know my obsession with it probably is frustrating. It's frustrating to me too, but there's, the problem is that I really can't deny that this is an important factor in my satisfaction with the day's effort. I think it goes back to there's actually two cognitive models for motivation. There's a process model and there's an instrumentality model. The process model has to do what your expectation is for doing the task compared to your actual expectation after doing the task. So you think about how you're going to like it, how much you're going to like it after you've done it, in that period before you start. And so if you think the reward is going to be great, then you're going to be, the theory goes, you're going to be more motivated to do it. So it's like working overtime. So are you going to be excited about working overtime, or are you going to be depressed about working overtime? And part of that has to do with what your expectation is. And it's the reason that pay as an incentive is somewhat limited in its effectiveness. So if in this model there are two forms of reward. There's intrinsic, that is the way you feel about the job, and there's extrinsic, what you get from the job. And if the sum of those two rewards is greater for having done it than for not having, then it was before you started, then the next time it comes for you to do that task, the more motivated you're going to be. That's the theory. So if, in the overtime example, if you expect that the extra 50 bucks, whatever it is going to be, you know, your mad money, it's going to be something you're looking forward to, it's going to be a new computer game or whatever. And so you're sort of motivated to do the overtime so that you can get the money, so that you can have this thing, or have this experience, whichever. But on your way there, you get a flat tire. So your expectation is that you're going to have, for having doing this, you're going to have the extra cash. But in the process of doing it, you don't get the extra cash because you have a flat tire. You have to repair the flat tire, and that takes up all the extra cash, maybe a little bit more. So next time somebody asks you to do overtime, you're not going to be quite as enthusiastic about the process of doing it, because you're aware that your expectation of satisfaction is going to be reduced, because the last time you did it, it wasn't as satisfying as you'd hoped. So that's expectation theory. Instrumentality theory isn't like that. Needs theory is tied to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And you're going to be motivated to do something if if you're rewarded with something that satisfies one of your Maslow's needs. I find that model extremely limiting, and in a lot of ways it has to do much more with expectation theory. But the expectation theory works in this case because, well, what we're trying to do, what the meditation is trying to do, is to have me focus on how it feels to do the thing. Get ready. Say it with me. Monk pose. Oh, it's soggy. God. Yeah. So it's working with your brain to get your brain to appreciate the intrinsic motivational factors. How does it make you feel? Not what you're going to get from it, so many words. And to value that in a way that puts you motivated to do it, because each time you do it, you get a little burst of satisfaction because of the way it makes you feel rather than what you get from it. And that's where I am. I'm working on focusing on those feelings, because it's really how I felt how I felt when I was doing the first few books, was that I'm motivated to do this because I like the way it feels. I like the way it feels to write the stories. I like the way it feels to produce the sport. I like the way it feels to have people read and appreciate the stories. But, you know, the people who read and don't like the stories, a little bit different, but, you know, there's always going to be those. So yeah, that's probably way more about motivation than you really care about, but that's where it goes. So I was also thinking about the presentations that I have to do in September for Colorado Gold. The Indie Author Bootcamp one is pretty straightforward. It's a straight, descriptive, prescriptive list of the things that you need to do as an indie author in order. In the order which you need to do them. So that by the time you go to create your email list, you already have an email address to link it to. So by the time you get ready to put a link to your website in the end manner of your book, you already have a website to link to. So that you're not having to stop in the process of writing, publishing, creating, in order to go back and backfill the things that you need to have in order to finish the creative process. The social media theory one is the one I'm most excited about. The social media theory is the intersection of social media practice and communications theory, and goes back to a lot of the work that I did in my PhD dissertation on perception of distance. And focuses on the point of promotion to foster an environment of influence, of authority, so that when you recommend a book, they go read it. The fans, the people who are listening to you, so that you don't have a lot of numbers. You don't have people who aren't interested, who are sort of interested. You only have people in your pool who are definitely interested, who will listen to what you put out, who will take action on your messages, which is the point of promotion, which is the point of advertising, which is the point of all the things that generally gets lumped into marketing these days, which doesn't really belong here. I know I've said this before, so feel free to zone out on this part, but the point of broadcast marketing is to put your messages in front of as many people as possible in the hopes that some small infinitesimal percentage of those people will hear your message and take action. That is, go buy the book or the thing or read the thing or whatever the thing is, that when you tell them about it, they take action on it. It's not that they retweet or share or like, or it's that they go do the thing. Retweet means nothing. Retweet is a reflex action. It doesn't involve engagement. That's one of the difficulties. Interaction does not equate to engagement. Whereas social media, the objective of social media is to put your messages in front of only those people who want to see them. Now, the challenge is, in either case, do you know who they are? At least in the beginning, you don't know who they are. You don't know who the people are who want to hear your messages, so you don't know who you can tell what to. So the whole crux of this is identifying those people who want to hear your messages and sorting them into channels where you have some expectation that they are on those channels because they want to hear your messages. So post on my blog, yes. People go to my blog to find out my messages. Twitter? No. Facebook? In the closed Facebook group, yes. And the Golden Age of the Solar Clipper Facebook group, yeah, those people are there because they want to hear my messages. You people are here because you want to hear what I have to say. It still boggles me that people want to hear what I have to say on a day-to-day basis. But that's the reality. That's the truth of it. I do this podcast to reach out to those people who want to hear my messages. I do this podcast. It's my motivation for doing this podcast is twofold. One, it's an accountability issue, so that if you all know that I'm doing well if I walk and I talk, and you all know that I don't do well if I don't walk and talk. If I walk and don't talk, then I'm doing better than if I do both, than I do neither, but not as good as if I do both. Because walking outside for 2 miles is, I think, a more satisfying experience. And when I walk outside, I talk. I don't have the noise of the treadmill to get in the way. So my motivation for doing this is not simply to reach out and send my messages to my fans, but to help foster my own health, motivation, emotional well-being. So it's a twofer. It's a double hitter. So I like it. As a process, it works for me on at least two levels, maybe more. I suspect it helps my physical health as well as my mental. So my website, yes. The closed Facebook group, yes. The open Facebook group, no. I don't publish in public. What I publish in public is not ever an advertisement. It's not ever, well, that's a great while. A very great while. But I don't usually have to do that kind of content any longer, since I have so many people who are willing to do it for me. Okay, the lawn man is here. I'm going to have to walk past the lawnmower. The point being, the difference between broadcast marketing and social media marketing is the cost. And if you've got deep pockets and you can afford to do broadcast marketing, then it can be effective. Advertising is broadcast marketing. All advertising is broadcast marketing. And so the effectiveness, the efficiency of broadcast marketing is greatly reduced. Which isn't to say it's something you shouldn't do. It's just something that I look at sideways. At any rate, I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day, and with any luck at all, I will talk to you then.